Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me for another conversation around the wonderful relationship between film and music. I know that on the last episode, I said that I was going to be sharing my conversation with Michael Pierce with you, but we've kind of flipped it. So Michael will come later on this week. And the reason being that we had the most wonderful opportunity to chat to writer, director, Celine Song about her new film, The Materialists. And it's actually coming out in cinemas sooner than I had thought it was. So I thought, you know what? Let's just switch those. So I hope that's okay with you, but I think you'll enjoy this because Celine is quite astonishing when it comes to how she thinks about music. It's really quite special and wonderful. So The Materialists is Celine's take on the rom-com, basically. We talk about that and just in terms of how, I don't know, rom-coms are almost slightly frowned upon in a way. But I think that she's done something quite extraordinary with this film. And not least because of her cast, actually. So starring Dakota Johnson, Chris Evans and Pedro Pascal, the film follows the story of a New York City matchmaker played by Dakota, torn between her aspiring actor ex-boyfriend and a charming millionaire. It is that classic kind of love triangle narrative, but just done with such confidence and contemporary approach and with a really pretty brutal and harsh underlying kind of narrative. And what I loved about my conversation with Celine was also just talking about how romance and love are kind of portrayed in cinema and how she wants to do that, particularly if you think about Past Lives, her last film as well. If nothing else, it was an absolute treat to get to chat to Celine, and I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. We're going to hear from Celine shortly. First, I wanted to share a clip from a YouTube exclusive that I did with Stephen Leckhart, who directed the Eminem documentary Stans. Now, this is out in cinemas now, and you can find the full interview that I did with him on our YouTube channel, which is Soundtrack and Extra. We'd really appreciate you subscribing whilst you're there. But in the meantime, here is a little taster of my conversation with Stephen, talking about his fantastic Eminem documentary Stans.
Well, the idea for the film predated me. So, you know, about over 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, Paul Rosenberg and the folks at Shady were talking about wanting to do something about Marshall and his fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, Paul has said this, that, you know, they didn't want to make a conventional documentary. They didn't want to do something where he would sit in a chair and tell his whole life story. And so that got Paul thinking about the fans and what if we turn the camera around on the fans? And at that point in time, you know, touring with Marshall all over the world, they would run into some of the same people. And some of these folks still had the bleach blonde hair and looked just like Slim Shady from 1999, 2000, even though it was 2014, 15. And so it just got them curious more and more. And so they started shooting behind the scenes with some of these people just on tour stops to interview people and get a feel for them. That's how they found Zolt Shady, the guy from France who's in the film, in our film. And then it kind of sat around for a bit. And then they got to talking with a guy called Antoine Fuqua, who's a director and a producer that I've worked with and that they had worked with. And I only make documentaries. And so Antoine recommended that they meet me. And Antoine's a producer on our project. And he felt that I would be an interesting fit for it. And so like you, I grew up watching MTV. In 99, I remember experiencing my first Eminem song. It was a friend who, you know, had a burn CD. And he was like, you know, hey, this is Dre's protege. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on, you know, hip hop in the 80s and 90s. I grew up in Los Angeles, so I was a huge Dre and NWA fan. And my friend put it in, and I remember hearing this, that voice and just coming on and blah, 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 so fast. And I was like, Jesus, that's whoever that is. He's incredible. And I remember my friend said, oh, he's a white guy from Detroit. And I was interested, just like head cocked. And then I remember watching MTV and just the way he was approaching music videos and lambasting pop culture people and sort of how fresh and different it was. Mm. And so, you know, flash forward to about 4 or 5 years ago when I got the call, hey, I'd love you to meet these folks. I think it'd be an interesting project for you. I was just so, first as a fan, excited. And then as a filmmaker, I was really intrigued by the challenge of doing something unconventional, because the song itself is so unconventional to write a song from a fan's perspective. It just felt like this was a really cool opportunity to make something different. And so then it was really just from there, a lot of conversations and collaboration to arrive at this vision. And I like to say that probably the most collaborative experience I've had as a creative person in my short time on this planet.
Stephen Leichhardt, director of the M&M Doc Starnes, in an exclusive interview that you can find in full at our YouTube channel, Soundtrack and Extra. It's also out in cinemas, and I'd highly encourage you go along and see it on the big screen, if for nothing else to be reminded and maybe taken back to that time, as I was, of when M&M first came on the scene and was a breath of fresh air with his originality and honesty, both in his music, but also in his music videos as well. So yeah, it's out in cinemas now, go and see it. And so to Celine Song, writer, director of the fantastic The Materialists, which is scored by our old pal, Daniel Pemberton. And we'll begin with his title cue. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
On this film. And thanks for kind of just giving us a really refreshing modern take on, you know, on a rom-com, really. It's been a long time coming, and we've kind of needed a, I don't know, someone just coming at it with intelligence, but humour and truth, I think, as well.
Yeah. Well, so I feel like it's meant to be for a lot of truth in the way that we sort of like deal with and talk about love, relationships, dating, marriage. I feel like, to me, it's an invitation, rom-com as a genre, but also this movie, to come into the movie theater for 2 hours, and we can all sit and think about and talk about love.
Yeah.
What an amazing thing.
Exactly. And it continues to be, I think, one of the kind of the world's biggest, so many things, isn't it? It's kind of, you can't put your finger on it. You can't really describe it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, love is a great ancient mystery.
Yeah.
And just totally holy miracle when it happens. Yeah. And it's always been so. And I think that, I think it makes fools of all of us. You know, I mean, talking about it. Yeah. Of course, especially around this movie, but everybody wants to have so many questions for me. And I'm always like, well, what's amazing about love is that even though I have to live my life with so many answers and know everything and be smart and powerful, when it comes to love, the only answer is, I don't know. But it just is, right?
And isn't it wonderful how music has such a strong connection with love?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that like music is more sensitive to love than I think that any cinema or anything can be, because it is about, I don't know, just that it's such a completely embodying human thing, music. So I feel like, I mean, I'm in love with music in a way that like, you know, it's when true love.
When you were thinking about how The Materialists would sound in terms of what you were looking for from the score, was that a journey in itself? Or were you quite clear about kind of what you wanted the music to do and how it fitted within the story with the characters? Because I love how it almost, there are almost kind of different roles the music has throughout the film. And there's a point where Smoke Break, I think the cue's called, where it shifts. where we are almost like the music's almost telling us that actually, like you, it's telling us about how she feels at that moment, I almost feel.
Of course. I mean, the thing about the music in the film is that it was part of the script to begin with. So it's to be, every part of it is that even the conception, music is I feel weird saying like it's a huge part of filmmaking because to me it is filmmaking, right? Sound and music is filmmaking. It's like, well, what is a movie except for moving pictures and with music, right? With sound.
Yeah.
So I think that is always something the way I think about it. It's not a part of filmmaking. It is filmmaking, sound. Yeah. So I think that when it comes to the needle drops, the actual songs in the film, a lot of them are already scripted. And I got to work with Megan Currier, my music supervisor, in past lives. And because I knew I was going to work with her again on my second movie, Materialist, I think I showed her the script really, really early on. And we were talking about music for the movie really early.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we discover certain things. Like there was a moment where Rolling Stones, You Got the Silver, was going to be in the movie and it was scripted. And I was so bullish on it. And then eventually in the edit, and I knew that was always going to happen. And in the edit, I realized that it is actually not right for it. Because so shortly after that, Baby Rose's incredible rendition of That's All happens after. And then I was like, well, now it's too close together. And now it's like, well, what's more important? Actually, That's All is a more important song.
I
so, right? So I had to cut that
sorry,
song.
Sorry, Rolling Stones.
Yeah, sorry, Rolling Stones. This is a more important song, sadly, for this movie.
Saved yourself a fortune as well.
Oh, my God, of course. Yes, definitely.
I can only give you love that lasts forever. And a promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone, that's all, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall. And a love who's burning light, warm the winter night. That's all. That's all.
But that's so true. You have to listen to what the film needs at those moments as well.
Well, I think the Harry Nilsson was a surprise for me because I feel like I wasn't sure if there would be music there that's a needle drop. I thought maybe it would be score.
Uh-huh.
And then I think that I was listening to it. I'm like, no, I think it should be a really funny song. So I was asking Megan to send me really funny songs and hopefully something that has a bit of a conversation about money and economy. Because, I mean, I asked her to basically send me all these iconic songs about love and money. And I think that, and then she, of course, sent me so many songs about love and money because I think we used to, especially in music, we used to, a lot of rock and roll was going to be really open about class.
Yeah.
Right? It used to be very open about class.
Yeah.
I think it still is on some level, but I think now it's about wealth. It's a little different than not having money, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that to me, so I think that's why a lot of the music was kind of leaning into that. Like, I feel like Lou Reed is always making songs about having money, not having money, how it isn't the way of love, you know? Like, I think it's like Lou Reed is actually a pretty, very, very class-conscious lyricist. So I think that I was listening to those songs a lot. Yeah, like Sweet Nothing, Oh Sweet Nothing, you know? There's some of it where it's very interesting. So I was like, show me a really funny song, you know, for the stepping on a condom moment.
Yeah.
I'll say goodbye to all my sorrow. And by tomorrow, I'll be on my way. I guess the Lord must be in New York City. I'm so tired of getting nowhere, seeing my prayers gone unanswered. The Lord must be in New York City.
But it's that's so interesting in terms of, like, for example,
Baby Rose's covers of those two particular songs. Yeah. So whether, you know, Nat King Cole and then Nico and Velvet Underground, yeah. of choosing that over the originals as well. That's yeah. kind of really interesting because it allows the song to have a new connection with the film, the story, the characters, the emotion, yeah. I think, as well, which is lovely.
Well, it can be a unique song for the yes. movie while being this very classic song that we've known and loved for a long time. But I also feel like it was more connected to what kind of wedding that second wedding is.
Yeah.
Because we were like something that I think this was happening in throughout all the departments, not just music, but I was like, well, this is a kind of like a dream wedding yeah. that is as... It's not a dream wedding because of how much money you spent on it, mm-hmm. but it's a dream wedding for two people whose main thing is that they're really in love with each other. And we were like, well, there was a question, of course. It's like, well, then do they hire a DJ or do they hire a live band? And yeah. I'm like, of course, a live band. And I yeah. bet it's their friend.
Yeah.
You know, I bet it's like the band that their friend has.
Yeah.
Who probably will come and be the wedding singers, right? yeah. And I think that was the idea always. So I always knew that it was going to be a live band. And then you're like, well, what would this live band play? Mm-hmm. And of course, there's so many playlists that I made with Megan about the wedding songs, right?
Your own dream scenario of what the
yes,
band would play.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But it's got to be right for the film and for that.
For that yeah. particular thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really interesting because it's always a problem with like music taste in films mm-hmm. where I think about this so much. Because I mean, like, I was talking to Megan about like, what is the... What would in the first wedding, the one where Lucy meets Harry, the really expensive, yeah. like, old New York wedding, mm-hmm. we were talking about, like, well, what would they play?
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, what do rich people play at their weddings? And Megan Good was question. Like, and Megan was like, I went to a really, really wealthy person's wedding this, like, couple of weekends ago. They played Who Let the Dogs Out?
And the worst music and, taste yeah, ever.
And Cake by the Ocean, right? So... So given that, so there was a really funny moment where she and I were like, so to be accurate, to be authentic to what actually would be played at this wedding, we should be trying to play Who Let the Dogs Out or Cake by the Ocean. But then you're like, well, but then you don't want the audience to think that the taste of the movie, the taste of the filmmakers,
yeah.
beyond me, the crew, everybody, yeah. we don't want them to think that that's what...
That's
we
what
believe.
Celine would have picked.
Yeah, exactly. yeah. So it's always a funny balance of like, well, and also like, how far are we going to go into satire? Is this yeah. movie actually a satire, yeah. right? And you're like, well, not really. It's actually, it's not meant to be a satiric as much as it's a little bit more critical.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's meant to be honest, not ironic. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think then, of course, we're like, okay, so what would be like a song that you can imagine in your film, that you can imagine, that would be like kind of a cheesy song to play at a wedding. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Sweet Caroline is the one.
Always.
Right? And, of course, yeah. you would that would get played at the wedding with the Who Let the Dogs Out. Like, that would just come up, right, the
Absolutely.
Song. But it still is this, like, beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
Know. Yeah.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing. But then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hands, touching hands. Reaching out, touching me, touching you.
That's a really interesting thing as well, because opening the film and not wanting to kind of place the audience in a kind of emotional state, because the music can drive that so much in terms of
yes.
if music opens a film and it kind of almost tells the audience, this is the kind of film it's going to be,
yeah.
or this is what you can expect.
Yeah.
And
Yours doesn't do that, and it's so clever because immediately we're in and we're watching and we're listening and we're, you know, you're trying to find out and really pay attention sort of thing as well. Well, was that a journey to, I mean, did you try music? Did you, what was the kind of journey with that? Because it's such a, I don't know if it's a, an interesting thing for you to talk about, but I find it kind of really fascinating.
Well, I think that's the best thing of it, right? Because it's like, I think a part of being sensitive to music is to understand the power of it.
Yeah.
The power of it being something that can manipulate too, and can also like encourage emotion, right? And then also it can overstay its welcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it can kill emotion too.
Yeah.
So I think that so much of it is like finding the right balance that's right for me in my movie. And I also feel like there's musicality to the sound of the city, for example.
Yeah.
Right? The honking of it, the sound of the wind. So I think of music as a thing that is connected to the sound of everything else as well. So it has to be in, what is it?
Synergy,
balance.
Yeah.
Right. It has to be synergy. Yeah. There has to be some synergy or something, because I'm like, well, why do we like playing music in our cars? Well, because of the kind of the sounds, very specific soundscape that it gives us. It feels very different than to play it in a big stereo in a living room, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the car is a very specific kind of space. So in that way, where the song is played and over what sound, the sound of the city, whatever, that's always going to be a part of the conversation as well. But to me, I'm always very sensitive, because I feel this way, because I am very sensitive to being manipulated by music. Because when I feel the hand of the music too much, then I disengage, because then I'm like, oh, you really want me to feel something here.
Yeah.
I think that I kind of try to lean on the what works for me.
Yeah.
So sometimes like not such a romantic song will play somewhere, or like I would delay when the romantic song comes in.
Yeah.
So which is all going to get decided on. And I think I usually know how I want to do it, because I feel like, for example, the very first piece of music that plays is Cat Power's Manhattan, which I already knew when I was shooting the cave people scene, that when there's a two cave people bump foreheads, I just knew that that would be the first beat of whatever song it was going to be.
I love it.
Really? Yeah. And I had a different song in it for a while, but either way, I knew that the first beat would always be with the two cave people bumping their foreheads, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And until then, it will just sound like ancient landscape.
Yeah.
So, and then I know that when that happens and then this modern song comes and then we transition into New York City, I always had that in my conception for that transition. Music is going to play a massive part in transition in films, because, you know, like that's a way to sort of like, it's part of it is like oil, like, you know, like you can use it to get us through things, right? Or like the Harry Nilsson, as it goes from John stepping on a condom in his apartment to Lucy waking up in Harry's apartment, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think so much of it is about how I want to tell the story through transition. And the music will always be a part of that.
I love the score that you and Daniel have, you know, created for this, because it does kind of go on its own journey through the film. And that kind of how it starts, the instrumentation that's used and how it starts off, I think, is really, really clever. And
and you know, there's really character in it as well. It's, you know, it's almost, it could almost be the kind of soundtrack to like the dating app almost in a way,
yeah,
at times.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a moment where I think, like I said, it's that, for me, it's that smoke break, mm-hmm, track where she suddenly realizes how she feels almost in a way.
Yeah.
When she has that moment with him, I think. I wondered what the conversations were with Daniel about kind of taking this music on a journey and, you know, through different kind of guises slightly in a way as well.
Well, the thing is that you're talking about a smoke break cue that of the first time they smoke at their loading dock.
Yeah.
What's so funny to me is that Daniel made that piece for that scene, but it's not in the movie.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've just been listening to the
of this, course,
the score,
that
and
makes
it's
sense.
In there, and you're kind of like, it's almost like you,
yeah,
see it almost weirdly.
Exactly. But I think that like that speaks so highly of like the work that Daniel was doing.
Yeah.
But the reason why it isn't there is because there we just learned that it gives away the ending if you,
yeah,
do play music. Because,
yeah,
again, it's,
yeah,
like it's too romantic. Like, it was too perfect,
yeah,
and too romantic,
yeah,
for it to stay in the movie.
Yeah.
So of course I tried with that.
Yeah.
With that, and of course, John and Lucy used to kiss in that scene too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with that music. And it was just so much that,
yeah,
it took away from the kissing and music later. So we had to make it
that.
Be just the sound of the city.
Yeah.
And then no kiss.
Yeah.
So that when they're singing That's All, which is when actually that kiss has to matter, then...
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
So I love that in your mind. It's like, no, it's like as if that,
yeah,
song was there. And,
yeah,
I think that's really true. Yeah. But working
that's
on the
so
score,
great.
It,
yeah,
was kind of like he just watched a cut of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just went away and he just started to send me all these different pieces.
Yeah.
And then I was trying different pieces and trying it here, trying it there. And then it was kind of like a bit of a puzzle piece. And,
yeah,
some puzzle pieces were just born perfect. Like the ones with the clients, where,
yeah,
it's like, you know, it's like a client and then they're describing what they want.
Yeah. It's like a transaction, isn't it?
It's a transaction.
Yeah.
Those scenes, I think I gave no notes on those scenes.
Mm.
Like it was kind of like, that's it. But then I think that when it comes to some of the other storylines, like Sophie,
yeah,
like Sophie's storyline, because it's really interesting, because that was something that I learned is something that I needed to bring in a bit of more emotionality, because,
yeah,
initially I feel like Daniel and I, we wanted to do something that is a little bit more brutal,
mm-hmm,
and a little bit like tough,
yeah,
a little bit tougher. And then what we realize is that, well, the reason why it doesn't work is because I think that too many people agree with Lucy's boss and that it's not actually Lucy's fault. So because, you know,
yeah,
what happened, because,
yeah,
there's a part of where they're like, well, it's Lucy's job. She didn't do anything wrong. So,
yeah,
I had to be like, well, even if that's true legally, Lucy
feels it.
So,
yeah,
I had to, then we had to then really telegraph,
yeah,
that, no, Lucy feels awful.
Yeah.
It's irrelevant,
yeah,
whether she will be sued or not.
Yeah.
What's important is that...
It's the impact it has on her.
It's the impact.
Yeah.
It's about the empathy. It's about the feeling. So in which case, then the piece of score that needed to exist in it,
mm-hmm,
had to be a lot warmer,
yeah,
right, and a little bit more emotional. So we started bringing strings. So,
yeah,
that was the hardest thing to, I think, find.
Yeah.
And the other thing I learned is really interesting, which is that when she finally confronts Sophie, and then they had to have that little, what I call a car chase, where they chase each other down in New York. That sequence used to have this incredible piece of score that Daniel created that I think is in the soundtrack, but it's not in the movie. And then I had to cut the music from it because even though it is meant to be unpleasant, music is such a powerful, pleasant thing.
Yeah.
Daniel wasn't going to make a piece of music that is horrible enough to reflect the feeling, weirdly. So we were trying to make it as horrible as possible, right? But it just couldn't capture because music is naturally beautiful.
And it also diffuses almost those uncomfortable situations.
Yes. Yeah.
So you almost need to heighten how uncomfortable it is.
In the silence.
Yeah.
Right, like silence can do so much. Silence with just the sound of the streets. Mm-hmm. That can do so much. Yeah. And then, of course, you can pay it off later.
Yeah. Wow, it's so great. And Japanese Breakfast track as well is My Baby. It's just
so good.
So wonderful.
Michelle did such an amazing, amazing job. I mean, again, she just listened to it. So she just watched the movie and felt inspired. And then she just like sent the song. And again, no notes when it comes to that. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, okay, this will go in the movie, you know, mix it, you know, and then we'll put it in the movie. Like, because I feel like I love that song too, because I think when our initial conversation about what song she was going to make, I think I was talking to her about like, well, I want it to be reflective of how much of fools that it makes all of us, how much love makes us feel stupid too. So I want it to be, I don't know, there needs to be a bit of it that's like a little bit childish too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then
she
does, and she has some amazing lyrics in it too, where she's like, it's like so specifically her, but is also like just so romantic openly, you know?
Necessarily reference points, but there are so many kind of great films over the years, romantic comedies with great scores, and I wondered if there was any particularly that you, I don't know, that you listened to, or you were like, oh, that's because that's what I love about the score for this, is it's not the obvious score for a rom-com, really.
Of course.
And I think that that's so refreshing.
Well, the title is not a very, you know, title is unconventional for a rom-com, too.
Yeah.
Because, of course, it's going to be about something. And it's also about the way that we commodify and objectify ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's happening, of course, in the frame of the dating market. Mm-hmm. Of course, we know it happening everywhere. Right, in every way. There is a kind of reducing human beings into numbers that are happening at every scale. And eventually we're starting to see ourselves as merchandise. The most important line in the film is, I'm not merchandise, I'm a person. Right? So I think it's like, well, a piece of merchandise cannot love another merchandise, but but a person can love another person. So why is it that we're all fighting to feel valuable when what we should feel is we should be fighting to be loved? Right?
Yeah.
And I think that because the movie is called Materialist, because it is about all of those things, I needed to accurately, the first half of the film is a bit of a mirror, right? It's meant to accurately depict the way that we talk about dating, the way that we talk about what we think love might be in the modern world in 2025. And then, of course, my intention is always to break it down, right? To make it fall apart in Lucy. And therefore in all of us, until we're reduced to somebody who says deal, to someone who just offers nothing but just love. So I think that because of that, the score had such a challenge of having to depict an ideology that we all subscribe to, watch it fall apart and not make any sense, and then of course a new ideology will emerge, which is that love is all. So I think that is the thing, that was a journey that I needed to be able to go through. And of course that is the journey that Daniel, thankfully he's someone who's very deeply capable of love. And I think that to me is also was important. It was really important that Daniel, and this is also true about Megan, who's my new video supervisor, everybody who works on this movie understands and believe in love in that way. That's very important. And Daniel does. So he knew how to walk us through this, you know, at times an intellectual, it's a very intellectual way of approaching score, because we're talking about a breakdown of ideology, breakdown of, you know, the movie's called Materialist, it's breakdown of ideology, but how do you do that in a way where it connects and it's emotional?
Lovely going back and listening to the score for Past Lives. Which is such a oh my god, it's so beautiful. It's the most calming and kind of
meditative.
It's just such a beautiful companion to have musically, the score for that film. And I just wondered, in terms of, you know, as a storyteller, going from Past Lives and working with, you know, a couple of composers on that into this, how your journey working with composers has evolved or changed, or what you learn, you know, from one film to the next, or if it just feels really natural in terms of how you work with music.
Well, I think that I feel like one of the most miraculously amazing things about making a movie is that you can have a new piece of music or original piece of music get made for your film. how those scores didn't exist until I decided to make a movie. So how amazing. Now there's new piece of music that is unique to this movie. So I think that appreciation of that will not change. I think I learned to appreciate it in my first movie, because first time I made the movie. I remember getting those scores and being like, I cannot believe that somebody, great musicians of our time, made this music for me and my story. Basically, right? How completely, it cannot be stressed enough how magical that is. So I think that remains. I think the thing that's true is that, of course, every composer is different. So the process will be a little different, but also every movie is different. So the kind of score that it should be will change, you know? And I think that it will always be something that has to feel unique to the movie. Like, I think Materialist score is so unique to Materialists, right? Just like Past Lives was so unique to Past Lives. It wouldn't make any sense to have Past Lives music in Materialists.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Or Materialist music in Past Lives, even though it's coming from the same filmmaker.
Yeah, it's the kind of unique relationship that's kind of embedded in all those things, isn't it? You know, looking at those incredible actors, it's about their performance, it's about your script, it's about your direction, it's all those things that have inspired those creatives to create.
Exactly, it's the alchemy of it, and it's also they're inspired by it. Like, in all the cases, like, the musicians just were inspired by the image and the lines and the story and the character, and then they'll just send me original music, and then I'll be like, oh my god, this new music is here, and now it's gonna be in the movie, and I'm gonna start trying things, you know.
Do you write to music? Do you have music around when you write?
I usually have like a song that plays on repeat while I write. Like, it's a little bit maddening. Like, I feel like it's like I play just on loop.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was it for this? Can you remember?
Yes, Andalusia by John Cale.
Andalusia, when can I see you when it is snowing out again. Farmer John wants you louder and softer, closer and nearer than again. Needing you, taking you, keeping you, leaving you in a year and a day to be sure that your face doesn't alter, your words never falter.
But on Past Lives, it was True Love Leaves No Traces.
Oh, wow.
By Leonard Cohen with Phil Spector.
As the mist leaves no scar on the dark green hill, so my body leaves no scar on you and never will.
On the song?
Well, I think that I eventually hit something on the playlist that I'm listening to a bunch of music.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then I think I hit something where I'm like, I just need this to be on loop, you know? I'm just like, I'm going to listen to it again. I'm going to listen to it again. Okay, this is on loop. And I just play it on loop.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Celine, it's so great to chat to you.
So good to talk to you.
Clearly see how your passion for music is so intrinsic in your storytelling.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
From the score to the materialist, that's This Is Dating by Daniel Pemberton, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the wonderful Celine song. My huge thanks to Celine for taking the time to talk to me. The Materialist hit cinemas in the UK on Wednesday of this week. That's the 13th of August. So please do get along to see it if you can. We've pointed you in direction of our YouTube channel already, which is Soundtrackin' Extra. And you can also follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtrackin' UK. And if you feel the need or want to drop me an email, always feel that you can. The address is info@edithbowman.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Next up then, we are definitely going to be bringing you my interview with Michael Pierce about his Apple TV Plus film, Echo Valley. So we thought we'd just give you an extra opportunity to go and watch it before we dive into our conversation. Michael Pierce on the next episode of Soundtrackin' coming this Friday. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.